And how we're going to begin the call tonight is Chickie has a wonderful invocation that she was going to share with us. So Chickie, if you would please.
Yes, I want to say first that this invocation was written by Denise Dignan, whom I met at Mystery School, Jean Houston's Mystery School in 2009. O fire that initiated this life, mother of creation, ignite in me that passion. Ignite those ancient fires, dancing flames of the wedding feast. Dance with me. Melt this frozen spirit. Awaken the sleeping dragon. There are angels to do battle, truths to defend. The dragon of change has opened her eyes. Have you heard? Did you hear? The dragon of change has opened her eyes. Oh, croon to her, you singers. Welcome her awakening with sweet, melodic voice. Massage her waking limbs, O healers. Gently set them tingling that she may rise. Pray for her, believers. Let your faith give fire to her breath. And you, dear poets, write sonnets to her, love ditties in her praise. Gardeners, bring your fruits and flowers. Festoon her with garlands and set out the feast. Gather round, for surely you've heard. The dragon of change has opened her eyes. Dress in your finest, bring out your best, give all of your gifts, and let's start the dance.
Wonderful. I just love that. That's awesome. Thank you, Chickie.
Mm-hmm.
Chickie is also known, she's known by her friends as Chickie, but she is known as the author, Dorothy Atala, of the book Conversations with the Goddess, Encounter at Petra, Place of Power. You can find Chickie's information at her website at conversationswiththegoddess.net or on her fan page on Facebook, Conversations with the Goddess. Chickie, in addition to being an author, is a revolutionary for who she is. She's ushering in, through her work, the embodiment of the transformational energy. She is a scholar and a grandmother and just an amazing woman. So Chickie is our host tonight, and who we have as guest are Isis Phoenix. She is a sensual shaman, a Reiki master, an ordained priestess, and founder of the Naked Yoga in New York City, an all-natural yoga movement that consistently garners international attention. As well as Naked Yoga, Isis also coaches individuals on sensuality and transformation through pleasure consciousness. She guides individuals towards a deeper understanding and loving of their bodies, their senses, and their sensuality. Website is www.sensualshaman.com. Michelle Geyer helps people to heal themselves by opening their bodies to spirit, expanding awareness, and a recognition that they are sacred vessels for the divine. After 40 years of study, writing, and teaching on the healing arts profession, she is currently compiling a book about the emergent dance between body and spirit. You can connect with Michelle at theenergeticconnection.com. Reverend Misa Hopkins is the spiritual director of the New Dream Foundation, dedicated to awakening through the sacred feminine. She apprenticed for several years with a Cherokee elder, studying ceremony and energy healing, as well as studying ceremony across cultures. Reverend Misa prayed for a path of enlightenment specially created for a woman's energy and connection to the divine. They are being revealed now because the time is right for the women of the planet to claim their sacred power in the feminine. She is also the best-selling author of the book, The Root of All Healing, Seven Steps to Healing Anything. Wow. A book that leads the reader into the very heart of their sacred feminine nature. And we have Susanna McCarthy, who is the convener of the Council of Sacred Mothers, which creates space for the energies of the sacred mothers to breathe and share their wisdom. She's also a member of the Auxiliary Council for the Women of Wisdom Foundation. Women of Wisdom has facilitated a women's spirituality conference for over 20 years, and Susanna's been involved for many years. In 2011, Susanna presented at Hastings Sophia's return from the Galactic Center. As founder of the Blessings of the Mother, Susanna works with those in transition to evoke clarity, healing, wholeness, and connection to one's unique life purpose. You can reach Susanna via email at sacredmothers@clearwire.net. We're going to begin now with Tiki. Tiki is going to talk a little bit about her book. I don't know if you were ready to do that, but just if you could give us a couple sentences about your book, and then we'll go into the questions, Tiki.
I think the title encompasses it. My book is a record, an account, or story, whatever, of expensive dialogues with a feminine presence who came into my life in 1981. And I felt finally that, yes, I should write that book quite a few years later. The subtitle is Encounter at Petra, Place of Power. And what that strongly suggests is that the ruined site of Petra, which is in the country of Jordan, I was told, the information I got was that this was a cosmic PowerPoint, the cosmic PowerPoint that is initiating a new planetary cycle, which would involve many planetary changes. I still live in the Midwest, but I was living in a somewhat conservative community where there was no evidence of the divine feminine. So I was very startled at that time by it all. And the book opens with an account of my unexpected vision of what I would now say was the Divine Mother, but I just didn't know who that beautiful woman was emanating all of that light. So that's it in brief. I invite you to read the conversations to see what the rest of the topics are. There's a great deal in there that involves mending the split in perception that women have about their bodies and their minds and spirits. And I won't go into that. So I want to say that,
I begin with the questions now, Tiki.
You want me to start with the question about the divine feminine manifesting?
How has the divine feminine been manifesting in your life?
Okay. There are two ways that the divine feminine has manifested in my life. First, there have been my personal issues as someone born in a female body, and I wrote about these, and how I now see them in a very different perspective. But the second point I want to emphasize more, beyond the divine feminine manifesting in my life, I think she's manifesting in the life of our planet. And I say this because of predictions in my book about planetary transformation. So I would like to focus on them in particular because our personal transformations are part of a much bigger picture of planetary transformation. So here are the predictions that the presence made about planetary transformations, for which there was no evidence at the time these predictions were made. I'm now witnessing these occurring 30-plus years later. First, the goddess or the divine feminine will reemerge. Many of us have become familiar with that. In this new cycle that is coming in, I was told that old ways of being will be swept away as a new way of being begins to emerge. Also told that women will rise into greater prominence and influence as they give voice to their own perceptions of what our world lacks and needs, and that we will discover our feminine power, and we will be agents of planetary evolution. And the fourth point, this reemergence will coincide with the birth of a new planetary cycle in which an entirely new civilization will emerge and evolve. Those were the predictions of, in brief.
So, Chiki, how do you see these predictions actually manifesting in the life of our planet now?
Well, what I see, it seems unmistakable to me, that, and probably to many others, that right now we're experiencing accelerated change, because there's evidence that old institutions and ways of being are being challenged, and they appear to be crumbling, and I'll give you some examples. So that means we're in an in-between space where the old paradigms of being are crumbling, but beginning to crumble anyway, but we can't yet clearly see what the new ways of being will be like. And as Jean Houston puts it, we are people of the parenthesis. I like that one. So the most obvious change that we're seeing is in the natural world, because we see change in the shape of powerful earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes and tsunamis on a scale that's more frequent and bigger than we have seen in our whole lifetimes. And then what I want to focus on most is the societal signs of ferment. Look at tonight. I was just a few minutes before I phoned. On television, I'm witnessing upheaval and the overthrow of old hierarchical forms of governance in the Middle East, which has traditionally been headed for centuries by a strong man. The younger generation in the Arab world seem to see no reason for this to continue, and they appear to be in rebellion against them to the extent that they're almost willing to die rather than live the way they've been living. And then I think there is the rise of women. I think we're just at the beginning. We're witnessing that as more women are giving voice to their own perceptions of what our world needs. And also women are feeling a great need to collaborate with each other and rise above old patterns of competition. We on our own behalf, we want to undo centuries of feelings of victimization and powerlessness, and then we want, on behalf of the planet, we want to name what needs to be changed. Whether there's a lot of urgency there, I think, given how quickly things are going. Then look at the collapse of the old economic model in our own country and also in Europe, in the Western world in general.
Are you still there, Tiki? Did I drop out?
No, I can hear you.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Tiki, are you still there, Tiki? Okay. I see you there, but I don't hear you there. Okay. All right. Well, if Tiki doesn't come back, we'll give her a chance to continue. We're going to go on here with Isis Phoenix. Could you just, introduce yourself? Tell us about yourself, your relationship to the Divine Feminine now, and why you think that that's so crucial at the moment.
Yeah, and thanks for that lovely introduction earlier, Mari. And Chiki was doing a really incredible job of, explaining this new paradigm that we're shifting into. But my name is Isis Phoenix. I identify as a sensual shaman, an earth-based spiritual healer who creates transformational ceremony to embrace this new paradigm that we're moving into. And one of those pieces happened to be, just kind of came to me in a vision. I said, I'm going to start a naked yoga movement. And it just kind of took off like wildfire, and the press got a hold of it, and now there's an international naked yoga movement. And part of my inspiration for that was being able, much like Chicky was addressing earlier, in how women were dealing with their bodies and, you know, coming into power and transmuting the shame. Part of that was my own personal journey in being able to transmute the shame and find the goddess inside of me and awaken those divine feminine aspects that, you know, are form and are the, you know, curves of a woman's body and her standing in her, you know, right power and divine relationship without fear. So I've seen, you know, both women and men become deeply moved and inspired by this practice, and I've seen it change and transform lives. And so that was really, I think, like my first kind of large global project that started to take off on my path of, you know, embracing the divine feminine in my own life. And now I'm seeing it, you know, as I start to move, you know, out of my maiden archetype and into my wife and mother archetype, I see it in, you know, more subtle ways every day. You know, just a simple act of preparing a home-cooked meal for my family. The power in being able to, you know, nourish myself and my loved ones and my friends, and is it this beautiful, you know, just goddess-inspired retreat where I was up in Vermont and just gathered, you know, a lot of, you know, spiritual girlfriends of mine and said, you know, okay, we're going to go to this, you know, sacred land that was my teacher's and be on the land, and I'm going to cook for you, and we're going to create ceremony together, and we are just going to sit and heal and nurture and live in alliance with the season. And everything, you know, is in full bloom at that time, and we're in the fields of Vermont picking, you know, herbs and making tinctures and salves, and then taking these to our communities and our families to heal just off the abundance of the land. And, you know, in this, you know, one field of Vermont, you know, there was enough red clover to feed our, you know, entire community. And it was in the sharing of that abundance versus, and also in the information that knowing, you know, what the plant is, you know, knowing that it's the people's medicine, knowing how to identify these, sharing the wisdom of the feminine and being able to distribute that among our communities versus, you know, hoarding that and, you know, keeping it into these kind of like, you know, locked vaults of secrecy. Oh, I won't share my healing, you know, powers with you. And so it's this new paradigm, I think, that Chicky was talking about too, about, you know, moving past those places where we've been under kind of this like female curse at times where, you know, the feminine has undermined both herself and each other. And we're coming out of that time where, you know, our economic situation in the West is crumbling. We're looking to new forms of, you know, abundance and healing and prosperity, and, you know, many people are uninsured, and so finding a way to, you know, feed ourselves, nourish ourselves, heal ourselves from, you know, very simple earth-based spiritual traditions recently has been how the divine feminine has been manifesting in my life.
Thank you, Isis. You had a question, which I would love to hear the you mentioned it briefly in your introduction, but I would really like you to explain this. You talk about yourself being a shaman, but where does the shamanic paradigm hold the balance of right relationship with the divine feminine? How do the two of them connect?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll give a perfect example in relationship to an experience that I had with Chicky's book. It was in my living room, and there were a group of female dancers who had come over, and we were getting body painted for a performance. And the body painter was a male African-American shaman, and he looked over and he saw conversations with the goddess on my altar. And he said, that is an incredible book. I enjoyed reading it so much. And I was almost astonished at what he had said to me. And I also realized that tonight is an all-women's panel, too. There was this moment where a man was stepping forward in his power and in service of the goddess, both in, you know, painting our bodies to then go and perform this piece about the love in women's bodies later that evening. And he'd also read this book and was holding it in such a high esteem, and he recognized the power of the feminine and was in full support and right relationship with that. And I see so many of the women in my community becoming awake and, you know, rushing, you know, towards and through the gates of the new paradigm and evolution. And I also see in our own learning curve that very few men are stepping forward to take that step as quickly as this massive number of women are. And it was in that moment that I realized, I'm like, oh, well, where is my relationship to the masculine in that? And how am I including him in this? And, you know, I had shortly after that time, you know, just married. And, you know, we're beginning our first year of marriage. And it had really, you know, changed everything. I was like, oh, I can do this quicker if I'm single. And, you know, I want to be, you know, an empowered, you know, Artemisian Dianic woman out there. And there was this part of me that was kind of living in the second wave feminine of, you know, woman coming into her power, specifically her sexual empowerment and, you know, her autonomy. And then there was this part where I realized, too, that, you know, here's half of our, you know, humanity that also needs to take this journey with us and to open, you know, man opening to the inner goddess inside and moving forward into this paradigm where we can step forward hand in hand and grow stronger because of that. So
that's great.
I'm holding
the
space.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Hello? Did you fall off?
This is Isis. I'm still here.
Okay.
And I was just going to complete this sentence by saying I'm holding a place in this paradigm for the masculine to meet the feminine in this new space as well.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah,
Michelle.
Hi, Mari.
Hi, Michelle. Would you like to introduce us a little bit? Tell us about what you do and why you feel right now it's essential and crucial for the divine feminine to be embraced and worked with.
Well, I'll just preface everything, Mari, with I'm a body person too, and I've spent the last probably more than a decade seeking the energetic connections between our body and our spirit. I've just started a new business called Sacred Bodies, Sacred Rhythms, and it's dedicated to that specific study, in a sense, experiential study. My new muse is Alex Gray's portrait of Sophia. I don't know if everybody knows Alex Gray, but it's G-R-E-Y, and he does incredible mystical art, and Sophia is my new muse. Essentially, I see the body as a reflection of spirit, a sacred hologram for divine energies, and the fact that the mystery is inside all of us. It always has been. We don't have to look outside. We don't have to go to school. We just have to go inside. Because inside of us, we have an etheric temple that's neither male or female, yet it contains the beauty and the mysteries of both principles, masculine and feminine. And like the iconography of Sophia and Christ, male and female bodies, or male and female energies, both are balanced and individuated and one within themselves. So like Isis, I too look to inspire men to the feminine principles and to incorporate them in their evolution.
Thank you, Michelle. One of the questions that you had me suggested was that human biophysiology is how do you see this related to the more spiritual qualities of the divine feminine? How does this manifest or appear to you right now?
The physiology and the spiritual energies?
Yes.
Okay. One of my favorite examples is, in yogic terms, there is attention given to Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna. Ida and Pingala are masculine and feminine energies, sun and moon, reflecting the hot and the cold, the cool and the warm, the masculine and the feminine. And Ida and Pingala, in turn, are related to our autonomic nervous system. And our autonomic nervous system is the part of our neurology that's governed in a sense, or triggered in a sense, by the hypothalamus in the brain. Excuse me. And the autonomic nervous system has a masculine side and a feminine side, an affectation or afferent side, and an effect or efferent side. So it's about receptivity and action. And one side of that autonomic nervous system is our stress response, and the other side is about relaxation. And you can probably guess which one is masculine and which one is feminine. So anyway, that's my favorite example. And Sushumna, by the way, just to follow up, is the central channel through which the kundalini and the primary chi energies are stimulated and moved from the root chakra up into the center of the head where the crown and the sixth chakra exist. And oftentimes, cerebral spinal fluid. People who practice cranial sacral work know all about this.
So, all right, now, I'm going to turn to Misa right now. Misa, if you could introduce yourself just briefly, and then I have some questions that I'd like to ask you after that.
You bet. First of all, I want to thank you, Mari. You're asking some great questions. And Chicky, thank you for writing the book. What a tremendous gift to all of us, and then organizing this roundtable. And I also want to acknowledge all of the other women on the roundtable. I'm totally enthralled by what I'm hearing. I feel like I'm just learning all kinds of new insights from each of you. So thank you. You know, Mari, I feel really blessed. My body literally forced me to get familiar with what the sacred feminine and sacred masculine were, because very, very early on I was producing as much testosterone as a male in puberty, and it was a long journey to discover what my feminine nature really was. And as I began to embrace these two energies within me, I was going into very deep mystical experiences into the nature of the sacred feminine and the nature of the sacred masculine. And it was some years after those mystical experiences that I was blessed to receive ancient ceremonies and practices in a native tradition that help us shed our limited bodies to become our limitless selves, or in other words, to become enlightened or awakened through the very nature of the sacred feminine, through our bodies, through our emotions, through our wombs. So it's been my privilege to work with hundreds of women and some men, some incredible men, in discovering the profound and mystical nature of the sacred feminine that lives within us all. As it's already been said, the journey is inward. In my personal experience, the embodiment of the sacred feminine is energetically the primordial womb of all life. So what happens in the macrocosm is a reflection of what we experience in our body in the microcosm, and vice versa. So if we think of that primordial womb of all life as an energetic space of limitless, unconditional love, then we have, all of us have that within us, both men and women. And in today's world, what I discover is that our relationship to that, when we enter into compassion, has a very profound healing effect on us individually, which ultimately affects us planetarily. I was really struck by Richard Dangent's work in the Jesus Papers, where he talks about the early Egyptian mystery teachings and the beliefs of our ancestors from Egypt, that the greatest sin of all was greed. And if we look at our planet today, it's pretty easy for those of us of any degree of consciousness to say greed is rampant. It's expressed through the small egoic I. In other words, I as this individual in this body, not the divine sense of I, that we are all unified as one, that we are all from one source as humans, as nature, as animals, as the trees. We all come from that original womb of all life. But rather, if we think of ourselves as that small I, my personality, and that I am most important, if we live there pretty exclusively without a cognition of the divine I, we accept statements and thoughts like the end justifies the means. It's more important for me to take care of myself, even if that is at the expense of others, even if that is at the expense of the earth. Those kinds of values are destroying humanity and the planet right now, or have the potential to. And the cure that I find is the compassion that one experiences that comes from that essence that knows how to hold all of life, all of its potential, in love, in complete love. Because when we are witnessed in true and pure love, without judgment, without anybody trying to fix us, without anybody telling us what we should be or intending for us what we should be, but rather witnessed as we are in our suchness, in our vulnerabilities and our fears. And we've all been greedy. We've all had fears that have created that kind of expression in our lives. So when we witness that greed within ourselves or that woundedness within ourselves in love, without doing anything to it, just loving it, what happens is that the fear dissolves. It just goes away, and all that is left is who we truly are, which is the great divine I. We're all one, one being, and we remember because we've returned to the primordial womb of all life. And we're held in that love, in the stillness of that love. We're witnessed in that love, and we're born anew in the way that I have come to know it. We're born anew in the divine masculine expression of bliss and ecstasy, of being fully who we are and being alive and exerting ourselves into the world in the most wonderful ways in action. And so they are energies that are cyclic. They are yin, they are yang, they are different kinds of beingness. And I think that this time on the planet, as we embrace the sacred feminine, my experience with the beautiful men and women that I get to work with is that the greed, the fear, dies away when we give ourselves permission to be held in that womb of unlimited love and compassion. And that's what my life and my work is now about. So thank you, Mary, for asking that question.
Thank you. I'd like to just one thing I'd like to ask you is why do you think it's important? I'm going to bring it back to Chicky's topic here. Why is it significant and important in our own personal growth right now? You've addressed it a little bit, but why is it kind of in a crisis point that we know that sacred feminine within ourselves?
Well, it's the nature of our death and birth cycle. You know, we tend to, as humans, in the way that we're created, we tend to take ourselves to crisis, or a point of death, which crisis creates, in order to discover truth within ourselves, in order to discover the depth of our potential for love. And the depth of that potential exists within the sacred feminine. So this planet's been on, it depends upon whose predictions you're looking at. I look at Mayan and Cherokee traditions because those are, you know, true to my nature. It's been about a 2,500-year cycle, cosmically and this planet, this planet included in the great cosmos here of creation, that we are experiencing the absolute limits of the divine masculine. And when we do that, that's a good thing because we discover the absolute limit of what bliss and ecstasy and expression can take us. But we also discover the great crises and the fears that are also part of discovering the nature of the sacred masculine. So we've taken it to the nth degree. It's time. It's just cyclically time for us to now remember what the sacred feminine is and how it brings balance to the nature of our sacred masculine, because together, when we're in that balance point, the Cherokee say that we are in harmony with all living beings. They call it the natural. So when we are conscious of the yin and the yang within us, so we have to remember the feminine nature, to remember it again, and be conscious of it in our awareness. As it's already been said, there is a point within our bodies that remembers what is beyond both feminine and masculine. But we must honor both in order to truly experience that ultimate place where gender, and they are just energies, they are names we give to energies, they are expressions we are in our bodies, but the energy that is beyond is transcends both genders, both natures. And that's ultimately where we're going. And this is our time. This is our great moment to remember the sacred feminine, to awake it within us so that we can be in that place of the natural or in harmony with all living things. So it's another evolution of love, of deeper, more profound love than we've ever experienced before in our human nature.
Thank you, Lisa. That's great, great explanation and great share there. Susanna, if you would like to introduce us to yourself and your work briefly, that would be fabulous.
Okay, aloha. And I'm very excited to be on the call with all of you. So thank you very much for the invitation. Actually, I'm going to answer my question in reverse and start a little bit with why I think it's crucial to connect with the divine feminine now and then go into what I do. And the reason I think it's crucial is just that so many structures and institutions in our world are crumbling. There's chaos. The media is lying to us. That so many things that we've taken for granted and so many things that we thought were our foundation are falling away, and that what we need is to develop inner wisdom. And that's where our connection to the divine feminine comes in, is in establishing that personal connection, in being able to listen, to get to that place of non-fear by having our messages come to us totally from a different place. And so my work is really about helping people to begin to image the divine feminine if that's something they've been unable to do. Because I find there are so many folks that when you say the divine feminine, you just get a blank stare. And so my work has been to actually take images of the divine feminine from cultures around the world, and rather than make it a PowerPoint presentation, I laminate things, and when I do a presentation, I put them up on the wall, talk a little bit about the characteristics of, I call them the sacred mothers. I talk about the characteristics of the sacred mothers that I've brought, and ask people who do they resonate with, and lead them through a series of meditations and journaling, et cetera, where they can get a better sense of the sacred mothers. And so my hope is I bring a wide variety of goddesses or archetypes or however you might want to say that, so some goddesses are warriors, some of them are holy women, some are homemakers. They really fill the spectrum so that any way of being feminine has a goddess that you can relate to. And I think that gives women a great amount of courage, and it really improves their self-esteem by saying, that part of me that society says is not so great is actually a lot like Sekhmet. And I really see the value in what she's done, and maybe I can take this piece of me and build it into what I'm here to express, or at least to rely on that, develop that part of me to help me express what I came into the world to do. And so that is kind of my answer about one of the reasons why it's crucial to connect with the divine feminine and then what it is I do with the divine feminine.
Thank you, Susanna. That was great. I loved it. Thank you switching it around like that. That's perfect. So now what we're going to do, we're going to switch gears here slightly, and we're going to go into asking everyone to, I'm going to have some questions here, and who, if you could, when you respond, say, you know, this is Lisa, this is Chicky, you know, whoever would like to respond to that question. We're going to move into in about a few minutes here after we've done this for a little bit to people sharing.
their experiences, to asking questions, to participating themselves. So we're going to, the first question is, let's look at here. How did someone practically in their lives recognize, you've all talked about it in your own way, but Susanna, you mentioned it specifically, and I'd like to hear from other people. The people who don't know this sacred feminine and don't know how important it is to connect with this and why it should matter to them, who would like to address that first?
This is Misa, and I'd love to address that. As part of the practice I was given, we were given a beautiful meditation we call the creation meditation. And what was so profound for us is that this was a way of deeply connecting to the sacred feminine, whether you're a man or a woman, and you don't have to know any fancy techniques. It's basically, in its essence, becoming very still with oneself and holding one's emotions in compassion. As I studied different approaches to enlightenment, what I discovered was that most of them, either you kind of skirted around emotions, or you went past emotions, or you let them pass by, but it didn't honor emotions. And emotions are so much a part of the makeup of who we are as people. And what we discovered in this practice is that when you give yourself permission to be present to your emotions, they are telling a story about who you are and what you are becoming. And so in holding our emotions and compassion, particularly our desires and or our fears and concerns, then we discover an aspect of self that we otherwise are kind of running over the top of, which we do really well in our current world. And when we get still with ourselves in that compassion, as I was talking about earlier, the fears dissolve, and what happens is that you feel yourself as that divine love, and you feel as though you can hold yourself and others in the depth of that compassion. In that compassion, we heal in the same way that as we run to a child a child runs to a mother when they're hurt. And the first thing they want is not to get fixed. They want to be held. They want compassion. We know that to be true as part of the sacred nature of the sacred feminine. So it's a beautiful and simple practice that many people can do to begin to understand what the sacred feminine's potential is in their life, whether you're able or not to relate to a goddess or able or not to relate to a woman. Most of us can relate to our emotions, and we can understand the concept of holding ourselves in compassion.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you. Would anyone else like to address this in a practical way in the context that Chickie offers? You know, with all the changes that are happening, you know, what is a practical thing, a practical way that people can relate to working with this divine feminine that will help them to deal with all of these massive changes that are going on both in the earth and in themselves and around them in society? So can I get a volunteer first who would like to address that?
This is Michelle.
Okay, Michelle. And who else is that? Was wanting to address this?
Yeah, this was Isis.
Okay. Well, Isis, it will let Michelle first, and then we'll have you say something. And I'd like to hear from Chickie too. So briefly, Michelle. Give us some practical things when people see all these changes around them. What can they do?
The first thing I'd just like to say to everybody is a fireman walked into my studio the other day, and he lives in a life of extreme stress and great practicalities because he's never experienced anything beyond it, being a man and in the context of his environment. And he very kind of sheepishly asked me what I was doing and what my business was about. And I just listened to him. And he asked very specifically if any of the work I did would help him with his stress level, with this high blood pressure, which is a very practical and common concern in this world right now. Everyone's stress levels are extreme, no matter who we are, and managing that is a great challenge at best. And on a not-so-practical level, I sat and I listened, and I just reflected to him what an amazing and courageous man he was just by listening, and that was in itself maybe very practical. And the other thing I suggested to him in the moment is pay attention to your breath. It's easy, it's simple, and just breathe and feel the breath running up the spine and down the spine. And taking the breath into a slower and slower and more conscious place.
Thank you, Michelle. Great practical advice. Isis, would you like to address that? And then we'll have Chickie address that too.
Sure. I think the most practical way that, I personally connect and then also offer others the suggestion of connection is simply grounding, being in nature, intending to be one with the earth, noticing the seasonal shifts that are going on, that are, present moment to moment, day to day, and season to season, and, creating something so small to live within those seasonal shifts, whether it's, eating what's local that's been harvested or marking whatever, spiritual tradition that you're following with something that then celebrates that, on a personal level and in the level of community, and becoming present with the outer cycles so that the inner cycles are more present.
Great. That's a wonderful piece of practical information. And Chickie.
And Mari, can I say something afterward? Okay.
Who is that?
That was Susanna, yeah.
Oh, okay, sure. You have to tell me your name, because otherwise I won't know who is speaking, because I'm not familiar with your voices. So, Chickie, can you give us a practical example of what you have done in your life with your children or with your grandchildren to help them to know this, whether they know it as the Divine Feminine or not?
A practical example?
Yeah.
With respect to being a householder, et cetera?
Yes.
Is that what you mean? I think my whole so many years of being a householder and realizing how little value is attached to all of the activities that have to do with raising a family, keeping a home, that bothered me very much as a full-time mother who had a master's degree. When I realized how strong a stereotype or stereotypical point of view could be, where a person like myself could be standing in front of someone and they would decide that the conversation wasn't going to go anywhere because I was a mother at home. And I had to ask myself, why was that? That was just, there's no way that I can get into great detail about it. But I remember that I thought there's some mystery here that I need to delve into, And for me, given the kind of education I have, I began to become interested in what kind of cultural mythology would be behind all of this, so to speak. And I started moving in that direction. This was before I had that vision of the Divine Mother. But I could not resolve in my own mind. See, I minored in philosophy and the history of ideas, so this interested me very much. the importance of philosophical points of view and cultural, unconscious cultural mythologies. If you are you could say, well, that's rather abstract and academic, and I would answer, no, it isn't, because I lived the shift from being a graduate student and living in the world of academe and all the values having to do with reason and the development of the mind to becoming a full-time mother and asking myself, why is this not valued when this is life? These are the processes of life that I'm attending to. So that became part of my question. When I mentioned this as practical application, it was because I was living those questions. And I needed an answer. I wanted an answer. So that is part of the conversation that I had when the feminine presence came in my life. I hope that I've addressed the question in the way you wanted.
Well, one of the things that I was thinking about is that what you began to do is that you, in addition to questioning these things and talking about them, also started valuing things like raising your children multiculturally, and you also valued, that family time, and that is part of a very practical, very down-to-earth practical way of honoring the feminine.
You have to, because it's life itself unfolding, and you are there to assist. And anyone who's been a mother knows that you live from moment to moment and daily necessities. You just have to be pragmatic. Otherwise, you're really not doing your job.
But you developed some unusual ways of doing this with your children that I think really is a precursor to your connection to the divine feminine. And that's what I was talking about, that we can move on here.
Okay.
And if you want to get to that, talk about that in a minute. You brought up a really interesting thing here. You said, old systems of money and commerce were built on imbalance and are crumbling. Soon it will be a time to re-envision how we use money, credit, trade, and commerce. I'd like everyone to sort of address this. What would it look like in our world if the divine feminine were present in our monetary and trade systems? And that's very much about the crisis right now that we're experiencing in the world. So the question is, what would it look like? What's your vision if the divine feminine were present in our monetary and trade system?
This is tricky. I could say something that might start the conversation.
Please.
Please. Oh, okay. Probably most of you have heard of Reanne Eisler. She one of her books is called The Real Wealth of Nations, and I would say that she's bringing the divine feminine in to the question of our economy, our model for our economy. When she says that we need a different economics that goes beyond our current model. We need and this is in quotes, caring economics. Our most important economic assets are not financial. The real wealth of nations consists of the contributions of people and our natural environment. We must give visibility and value to the socially and economically essential work of caring for people and nature. And that has not been valued because it's been, for the most part, women's work. And it's very economics tends to think in terms of quantifying, caring for people and the environment is don't think you can quantify it or think of it in terms of a product.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Great point. Who would like to address that question? Your vision of if the divine feminine
Susanna.
Were more involved. I'm sorry?
Susanna.
Go ahead, Susanna.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking of the movie I Am. And one of the things that comes up in that movie is the definition of mental illness is living in a multi-million dollar home when those outside the gate live in poverty. So kind of a reverse of how people are often conceptualized. And I don't remember who was talking about greed, but I think that greed would be something we would put aside and it would be replaced by sharing and making sure that all have enough, all have their basic needs met. So I don't have the formula for that. I've heard that it exists, that the possibility of a monetary system or of an economic system that is not based on money exists, and there are just so many forces fighting against it that it can't even get airtime. But I do really think the idea, the Native American idea of looking forward, of caring, of having policies that extend through the seventh generation, is a good way to look at things and not just be looking at how can we get return in the short term, but what is going to fulfill life for those that come after us and after them and after them.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Great point. Thank you. Who would like to contribute their vision?
This is Michelle.
And thank you,
Michelle. Hi. By the way, speaking of the divine feminine, in here in Santa Fe in New Mexico, it just burst out in thunder and rain. That's the feminine at work.
Yahoo!
In the high desert, it's really quite amazing. But on another note, on the note that you're speaking to, we have something here, I believe it's called the time bank. And I believe it's very connected to the divine feminine and the energies of the feminine nature principles. Everybody's service is equal. Everybody's product is equal. And it doesn't matter if you're a massage therapist or a counselor or if you grow tomatoes. 1 hour equals 1 hour, and you bank time based on your service or product. And there's a system that they've created that balances everything, so that everyone gets to trade, in a sense, based on their particular service or product in an equal sense. And I feel like that's a very wonderful way to express the feminine in economy and commerce.
Wonderful. Thank you. Who else would like to contribute their vision of what the divine feminine, how it would look?
This is Isis. I'd love to speak because I also brought the question to the group, too. And I was just thinking, as I heard you read it back, Mari, that I had this quote on my refrigerator that says, "A real wealth consists on not having great possessions, but in having few wants." And I think based on, you know, seventh generation philosophy, right relationship, you know, all things in their sacred harmony and balance, and much like what was just interaddressed with, there's 24 hours in a day, and we're each here to contribute dynamically in those 24 hours with our sacred gift that we've been brought here to contribute with. And I think Starhawk also had a really beautiful description of this in her book, The Fifth Thing, where she showed the community and what that would look like and was envisioning it for the planet, where, you know, it was about everyone working together and, you know, having all the basic needs met, and what you put into community is also what you got out of the community. And so if, you know, someone was not willing to contribute, you know, they could, you know, survive. But there wasn't, you know, that abundance, that dynamic flow that was present. And I think much like this paradigm, it's like we're all in this together. And so if my neighbor isn't fed, you know, I'm not fed either. There's a part of me that's starving too. So I think it's looking at a broader picture of the, you know, I-E-Y-E rather than the, you know, small I.
Great. Thank you. Misa, or would you like to add something before we move on to another topic here about your vision for autonomy and the divine feminine?
I would, and part of this comes from my experience in business consulting many years ago. What comes to mind, in addition to all the incredible responses to this question, is that I think we will redefine what bottom line means, that monetary profit will be one, could be one measure of success, but even more importantly, what difference did we make? How did we make life better for our family, for humanity, for the planet? Because when profit becomes a concept of benefit to all, then I think we do eliminate that greed factor. We do take care of ourselves, of course we do, but then we also recognize that we are part of a great system, and we are all dependent upon each other, and we are a part of each other. And so when we make sure that there's benefit to all, then we will have created a very, very different monetary system.
Great. Thank you. And Chiki, one of the things that you talk about is a new environment that we would live in. And going back to the villages and how that would affect us. Would you like to share that briefly?
Well, as a full-time mom, I lived in the suburbs, and one of the things that was striking to me is how our environment took on a physical configuration that mirrored our cultural mythology of the split between the masculine and the feminine, the masculine being defined as the values of the workplace, and the feminine as the values of the domestic sphere. There was such a split there. But and that was recognizing that was eye-opening to me. And I began to think, okay, what are the disadvantages? I mean, it impacted me personally and my children, you know, because I think the kind of split between the domestic sphere and the workplace creates stresses that aren't necessary. And I experienced those directly. Over the years, what I did was I imagined what kind of living circumstances would I have liked for my children to be part of, just the physical configuration as well as the kind of climate. And I imagined a village in which the configuration, the top priority had to do with the safety of the children, because of people, because and this is still true today, I think, that the domestic sphere, our residential areas are, for the most part, separated from the workplace, and all the roads that lead from the home, all roads lead to Rome, so to speak. And I thought, well, that configuration is an indication of what is most valued, really. That's why women who are in the domestic sphere feel sidelined and physically so, you know. And I began to think, well, what kind of a village would not only be a safe place for my children, where where top priority isn't given on convenience for the workplace and having all the roads, you know, go to Rome, so to speak. How would I reconfigure that? And I was thinking, that kind of access wouldn't be possible in my village that I was imagining, because the safety of my children would depend on people not thinking of roads as impersonal space, which lead practically right up to your front door, which I think also I imagined that with the advance of technology that more and more people would be able to work at home, both men and women, and therefore there would be more eyes than just a tired mother's eyes to look out for the children. And I began to imagine that, in fact, the village could be like a large extended family, because for so many people, because they have to move because of jobs, because of income, they get severed from, this was true for myself and my generation anyway. You become just a little nuclear unit, which doesn't seem, it seems unnatural when you consider that there are entire villages, or used to be anyway, in Africa where everybody knew everyone else, and the children were minded by many people, not just one person. That's just part of what I've thought about. I think you probably want to go on to another question.
I think this is a real important part of when we think about changing, envisioning that God is involved in changing the economy too, is that what are our values and what are we going to value? And people have talked about that, but a big part of it is that, you know, the goddess is a mother. The mother is the mother, and the mother's issues have, as you say, Chickie, have been devalued. So if we change our environment and how we deal with what we find of value, that is going to immediately change our economy. So that's a great question, great answers to those questions. I'd also like to just very briefly, if you would like, because we're going to close pretty soon here, if there are any other comments that people would like to make, if you could take this in turn here, starting with Susanna, other comments that you have about seeing the planetary change happen, and things that you would suggest that people be aware of or see as a manifestation of the divine feminine. How do you see these changes come about, and what is encouraging about these changes? I guess that would be a great way of describing this.
You know what? I'm not quite prepared at this second to answer that question.
Okay.
So the planetary change, yeah. Okay. I might, just let me think for a minute. Okay.
Okay, but, great.
So
we'll come back to you.
Someone else. Okay.
We'll come back to you.
Okay.
So, Misa, if you have some ideas about, in looking at the planetary change, you know, what is encouraging about it for us?
I think this is our opportunity to really create the world that I heard Chickie talking about, where we're changing our values and therefore we're changing the way that we live in a manner that supports our values of family, supports care, supports the kinds of values that we as women, certainly many, many of us, hold and in fact have brought into business and have brought into politics, and we've already made a difference. I mean, we have businesses now that have childcare centers in them, for heaven's sakes. We have more couples working at home. It's already shifting. We're making that change. This is our grand opportunity, and I think if we can be aware that in this time of shift, there are many people that are going to hold on to the old values that maybe haven't been working so well, that are willing to take risks for huge oil spills in Mama Ocean and not perceive that it's their responsibility to clean it up and to have planned better to begin with. We're going to see institutions fall that have been based on lies and deception. We are going to see people that have been very, very greedy continue to want to hang on to their greed. We're going to see conflict, and we're going to see people that are, seem to hold values that are in conflict with our own desires. And the key to all of that, in my humble opinion, is to find compassion. Because when we are met with compassion at our worst, what I talked about earlier, those fears that are driving our choices and behaviors, they dissolve when they're met with clear compassion. I don't mean tolerance of things that are inappropriate or harmful. I just mean the compassion for what's going on underneath the choices that we're making. That's when we're going to see opportunities to step in with the values that we want to see perpetuated in this world and in this coming age.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you. Susanna, are you ready, or shall I come back to you?
I am. Nope, I'm ready. I am a social worker by profession, and I trained social work therapists. And one of the things that I see as a huge promising thing that is being realized is just how many things have shifted in the area of parenting over the last 30 years when I've been involved in the field. That communication skills that were so new back then are now something that are known and used much more broadly in the population. And I just see the mothers that come forward with courage, overcoming their addictions, overcoming their abuse, and having a lot of inner resources, resiliency, and tools to really step forward with courage to make sure that the lives of their children are going to be different than their own. And so that's the part that gives me a lot of encouragement, and I am just so in awe of especially these single moms who sometimes work two jobs or have five children, some of whom have disabilities and illness, and they still wake up in the morning and their commitment with joy, or at least with a sense of this is what I'm here for, is to make sure that their children have a better life. And I find that really encouraging. What I'm hoping for is that they get more help because heaven knows a lot of them have so many strikes against them.
Right. Thank you. That's a great point. Great. Michelle, if you'd like to look at the world that's changing now and find the encouragement for us, if you could point that out from your perspective.
I'm glad you asked that question again, Maury, because I did not address it the first time around. Simply put, I think we really need to shift our biology, our physiology. And I feel this is true, or that the feminine principle is a crucial part of our human design, because one half of the universal law of unity is feminine. And without the feminine aspect, we're not only disintegrated, we can't find oneness or autonomy or compassion on any level. I think that there are about, I put together five key things. One is we need more receptivity. We need receptivity because we need to meet the masculine energy, the pretty extreme stressful, the stressful masculine energy. We need to meet it so that we can find some balance, beginning to balance ourselves to find non-resistance, fluidity, compassion, empowerment, some curiosity and openness. They're all states of non-resistance. And in order to evolve, I think we need stress. I think we need masculine energy. But back to that definition I made earlier about the autonomic nervous system, the difference between stress and rest. Evolution happens because we can rest. Healing happens when we rest.
So what is the encouragement that we can find in these changes? Where do you see the changes happening that are encouraging to you? You'd like to share with the audience and with us right now.
Well, I feel like I'm pretty blessed in the fact that I live in Santa Fe, because it's a place where people pay a lot of attention to their biology and physiology, their health and healing. And I guess I would say that everywhere I go, I'm pretty encouraged by the fact that people are taking care of themselves, and rather than, because they take care of themselves, rather than reacting, they're able to find a ground of being and able to respond rather than react. And that may be true across the planet, but I just know that in my hometown here, that happens a lot.
That's great encouragement. That's wonderful encouragement. I say that. Thank you. Chicky, you are Isis, if you were to say the encouraging thing for you right now is, what would that be?
My encouragement right now is looking at where there's abundance in my life and offering that to my community selflessly. And through that, there's togetherness. And some, like a simple example is, if I have, a lot of food left over that I've cooked for my family that I know we couldn't possibly eat and wouldn't freeze well, I take it to a friend's house who might work long hours or be stressed out, or I give it to the homeless man on the corner, and we just have, like, his bag every Friday that's gifted to him. So being able to see where there's abundance that could overflow into the community, I think, is creating, looking for that sense of how we can keep togetherness happening from a selfless perspective.
Thank you. And Chicky, where do you find the encouraging word these days? Where do you see it happening?
Well, I think when I look at the changes in the world that we're witnessing, I just remind myself that the presence predicted that there would be a new reality, but that we would be in an in-between space. And so I say to myself, okay, I'm in that in-between space. I sometimes get upset, for example, when I look at what's happening in the Middle East, because like everyone else, I think, well, if that were my son dying, would I be calm and say to myself, if there's a new order coming in? I doubt it. But nevertheless, I prefer to live with the idea that human beings can accommodate change, and not only just accommodate to it, but actually create it and co-create with the evolutionary cycle that we're in, and with the Divine Mother herself. I think that's what we're being called upon to do. I think she is a vast force, and I would much prefer to co-create with her than to resist her, let's put it that way. Because I think she's got, big intentions for change.
She does. She does, definitely.
Yes, in other words, I prefer to be on her good side.
That's good. That's definitely an encouraging word. Now, before we close, we have some time here for if there are any questions from our callers or people who are on the webcast. If you have questions or comments that you would like to share, or if there's a particular person on the round table that you would like to ask a question or address a comment to, now is your time. We have a few minutes, so if you have anything that you would like to contribute, here's your space. Well,
We're very glad that you're on the call and that you have been listening and participating in the way that you have. If you want to reach people, I can give you their contact information so that you can contact them directly. Again, it's Tiki is the host here, and she is the author of Conversations with the Goddess. You can reach Tiki on her website, conversationswiththegoddess.net, or on her fan page on Facebook, Conversations with the Goddess. You can also contact her through me. I'm her publicist, or have been for the last year. You can reach Isis Scenic at her website, www.sensualshaman.com. You can reach Misa at Misa, I don't have your website down here. If you could please say that. What's the best website and email for you?
Sure. It's newdreamfoundation.com, and they can reach
Thank
me
you.
There.
Thank you. And Michelle, your website is theenergeticconnection.com, and you've also given me your phone number, so I'm going to pass that out, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
To reach Michelle, you can call her at 505-795-6865. And Susanna McCarthy, you can reach her by email at sacredmothers@clearwire.net. Or you've also given your phone number. Can I pass that out soon?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The phone number is 206-271-3207. And you can reach me, Mari Selby, at mari@selbyinc.com. Thank you all for a wonderful evening, a wonderful process. I think we could go on and on. There's so much material to talk about here. I didn't even get past half of things that you suggested for me to talk about. But I really appreciate all of your contributions. It was very enriching. Susanna, we're going to do that in a minute. Yes, we're going to have you do your closing in a second.
Okay.
Does anyone have anything very briefly that they would like to say before we do Susanna's prayers for closing?
Thank you. I just wanted
to
thank everyone. This is Tiki. I wanted to thank everyone for being present and for participating so fully.
Anyone else have anything else that they would like to say briefly before we have Susanna do our closing? Susanna, please,
okay.
Wonderful, beautiful
okay.
closing.
So this is a meditation that was given to Rudolf Steiner. Rudolf Steiner says, the Divine Mother is understood as the living, feeling being who is the spiritual origin of all matter. And here, in the prayer I'm going to read, she speaks in her own words to humanity. If you seek me with true desire for knowledge, I shall be with you. I am the seed and the source of your visible world. I am the ocean of light in which your soul lives. I am the ruler of space. I am the creator of cycles of time. Fire, air, light, water, and earth obey me. Feel me as the spiritual origin of all matter.
Beautiful. Thank you all, and I'm going to stop the recording now,